There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast. On the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Yeah, we're an hour 44 of Twitter sadness, which immediately turns to self-promotion. Yeah.
But I also literally got the news right before I was walking into a big network read for A to Z. I was literally walking down the hallway to go be a chuckle fuck for the big brass at NBC, and someone's just like, hey, Robin Williams committed suicide. And we're like, fuck.
I was the first one to message all the friends.
He broke it to
thank
me.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for that, Ben.
No
thank
problem.
Thank you so much. And it was from the Jason Voorhees Twitter account.
No, that's not where I found out about it, but I did see that Jason Voorhees mentioned it, and I thought that was... Maybe Jason could have let that one go.
Yeah.
You know, but it was kind of sweet.
It was.
I loved him in Aladdin.
Also was asked on Twitter if I could include more choking and sucking on the podcast.
Mm. Oh, okay.
I think it's for masturbation. And yeah. I'll have you know, you're naughty, and you shouldn't be masturbating to this. Ew. That's gross. Unless you're a lady. And
no, people like
it all day long.
People like to masturbate to you. You're on that website, Bear Huggers or Bear Lovers or
Chubarama.
Chubarama. Chubarama. So, ladies and gentlemen, go to chubarama.com and leave the finest reviews for your one and only Hong Kong Henry Zebrowski. Let everyone know you like the way he looks.
Everybody can jerk off to me.
Usually, I have a lot of people jacking off to my voice, but I feel like people are actually jacking off to your body, Henry.
Yeah.
Isn't that strange?
What do you mean strange? I think it's different and unique. I think if you find me sexually attractive, you're probably a cool person.
Yeah. I'm sure they're into cake farts and stuff like that.
Who is it?
Yeah, exactly. I think I'm going to get into it, by the way. Anyway, welcome to the show. That's Marcus Parks. I'm Ben Kissel. Of course, we're joined from beautiful Los Angeles.
Hi, my name's Ted Kaczynski.
Ted Kaczynski himself. I had no idea you were on the line.
From the Supermax prison in Colorado.
Yes, it's good to be here, and I gotta say, I went to the commissary, and I said, do you have the trident that I ordered? And they said no, and I will have my revenge!
I agree with you, Ted. You gotta have nice smelling breath when you're in prison, so when you're violently accosted in the showers, everyone also has a good time.
It seems my natural spoiled milk smell seems to keep the men from me.
Really? So you've actually this is kind of interesting. Like what's like a skunk?
Yeah.
Or other animals that exude toxins and smells that are so unlikable that someone won't even kill them.
But Ben, doesn't a skunk also deserve some love?
I agree.
From other skunks.
Doesn't a skunk deserve a wife? A skunk wife? Well. I guess I'll just have to go through with this stinky old pillow of mine I've been rubbing my dookies on so it can smell like me.
So you've been rubbing your dookies on your prison pillow.
Yeah.
Well, Ted, you're a brilliant mind, and I'm sure all the mathematical equations that you've written in dookie on the walls completely make sense, and you're like Goodwill Hunting, speaking of Mr. Robin Williams.
Yeah,
What's the fellow that Matt Damon played? Whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Will, I guess.
I have to definitely say... That's the first time I've heard that comparison.
All right, let's continue on. Ted Kaczynski.
Man, I spent a while reading his manifesto this morning.
Yeah.
What a fucking crybaby nerd.
They always are. He's like a BTK type.
He's got a couple of good points. We're going to get into...
I'm fine with the philosophy.
No.
You know what I mean?
The philosophy's good. I enjoy the philosophy quite a bit.
Except for that he gets a little racist.
Well...
Up top.
I mean, Anders Breivik did copy and paste very large sections of the Unabomber Manifesto after he killed those 77 kids, except he replaced the term leftist with multiculturalist and also cultural Marxist.
And as we discussed before, Andrew Breivik, he now is in an Oslo prison, and he has paid friends because they don't want him to get sad. I'm sure Mr. Kaczynski. Ted, as a matter of fact, do you have any paid friends in prison? Is anybody hanging out with you at all, or...?
Let's just say I'm difficult to be around, but what I've done is I'm getting really good at toilet wine. So
you're making your own fine vintage, huh?
If people want to come by old Kaczynski's place, I got a whole bunch of Merlot that's been stewing around in my butt sink.
That's no what one you call it. Come. A toilet is now called a butt sink from here on out.
No one will come and hang out with me.
So Kaczynski just got nicknamed the Unabomber, the Universities and Airlines Bomber. Because yes. Where was the first university bomb
at? The first one was at Santa Barbara, I believe.
Then, and then American
Airlines.
Santa
Barbara's beautiful this time of year, too. It's so nice up there.
L. Henry, you can just hop in a car and head on up there.
I could, couldn't I? Or a trolley. Or a bus. I think California's beautiful.
Stay right where you are so you have an alibi for this evening. I think you're dangerous when you're isolated and lonely in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm looking at a video view right now, and I can see the sun shining in through the window, and even the sun is depressing in Los Angeles.
You know why? Because it doesn't fucking stop.
It works
too
hard.
It's like God is always looking for your secrets. Sun gets in your crevices.
Well, what happens in the dark of New York will be shown in the lights of L.A.
Sure I will have my revenge!
Yes, you will. All right, let's get Unabomber.
Unabomber. So, when we left off, Ted Kaczynski, he had just made the headlines for the very first time by bombing American Airlines Flight 444. Was not done with the airline industry just yet. He's one thing that we'll start seeing now that he's starting to, like, I guess, get into his groove. There are going to be very long stretches in between attacks with Ted Kaczynski. There's going
to be
stretches.
Apparently, he was taking a lot of downtime to work on his ribbon dancing for the Olympics.
I heard that.
When he was working on his ribbon dancing technique, again, he went to the qualifying rounds to one of the specific breaks, and he didn't get it because he smelled like dog shit. And they said that would ruin the Olympic Village. And again, another reason Ted Kaczynski was looking for revenge.
Is it true that he shoved the ribbon up his own butthole and tried to lit it on fire? And yes. Lit it on fire, and then he called himself the first human bomb?
Yeah, yes. He also went by this big stinky yo-yo.
Well, he was not done with the airlines. 2 years later, after American Airlines 444, in June of 1980, he sent a letter and a book to the president of United Airlines, Mr. Percy Wood, and the note that he sent along with it, he said, "Dear Mr. Wood, I am sending copies of Ice Brothers by Sloan Wilson to a number of..."
Which sounds like a Wayne Brothers snow comedy.
"...to a number of prominent people in the Chicago area, because I believe this book should be read by all who make important decisions affecting the public welfare."
So he's just an uncle. He's just a bad uncle, but he has no nephews or nieces to spread on his cool books that he thinks
he's
will educate them.
He's a smelly Oprah.
A smelly Oprah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
So what actually was inside the book was a ingenious little bomb. When you opened up the book exploded. Tiny metal and wooden fragments exploded in this guy's face. Hmm. He had damage to his hands, his face, in his thigh. There was a huge chunk of metal lodged right in there.
This reminds me of those talking cards that Hallmark sells now. When you open it and it's like over the hill and it's like a big fat chick on a beach, and then it just, you open it up and she's like, "Happy birthday, you old bitch, you old bastard, your balls are all wrinkly and strange. Happy birthday, yeah.
It's my birthday. What is this with these cards?"
So he was just experimenting with that, but yeah. his birthday gift was a bomb.
A big
bomb.
You know,
but technically a lot of these bombs that Ted Kaczynski set out just kind of sound like Looney Tunes pranks.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be a lot of Looney Tunes pranks coming up here pretty soon. He was definitely a prankster. Well, this is the point when Postal Inspector Tony Muljot
bad
shows...
name.
"So, I think I want to go into medicine. What's your last name? Muljot?
Oh,
you're gonna be more post. Think more postal work.
You're a mailman. That's a mailman's name."
And interesting fact about Tony Muljot: there was a biopic made of him for the USA Network in 1996, in which Muljot was portrayed by Dean Stockwell.
Really?
I love Dean Stockwell.
Yes, of Blue Velvet, Quantum Leap. Battlestar Galactica.
There is
handsome
no doubt.
Guy. Cool actor.
No doubt in my mind, now knowing that piece of information, 1995 USA Network, the only reason that network stayed on air is because of Lorenzo Lamas. That show was the only show that mattered.
silk stocking.
Renegade.
He was tortured into being handsome. We know this story. Yeah.
So Tony Muljot, he was the one that started putting a lot of the wood clues together. He noticed that in all of these bombings, there was always wood involved. There was wood pieces. There was a wooden box. In this bombing, the letter was addressed to Mr. Wood. Publisher of the book was Arbor House, whose logo was also a leaf. The phony return address was Ravenswood Street.
Cool.
And so he did have a sense of humor.
Yes. Did. Yeah.
I mean, it did. It does sound like all like locations from like a Fear Street novel. You know what I mean?
Ravenswood Street.
Ravenswood Street, where the babysitters are terrified.
So this is also when he starts putting his own little signature on all the bombs. They found two initials punched onto the bomb, FC.
Okay.
And they found out later that FC stood for Freedom Club.
It is kind of fun.
But in order for it to be a club, there has to be more than one person in a
this
shed.
This is how sad and lonely Ted Kaczynski was. Even the manifesto is from the point of view of a group. He had to make up his own. He said he wanted to be a hermit, but no, he wanted friends. Yeah. He wanted to have like a Winnie the Pooh type scenario with a bunch of friends.
Right.
And he was Piglet, and he had a funny bouncy tiger friend, and a soft bear friend, and a little boy friend, and he couldn't get it together. And speaking of the wood used in this whole process, like once he figured out like the wood being used, where they started like kind of like pinging out like, well, one thing that we now know about him is that he is a woodworker. Like, mm-hmm. obviously he's got some kind of woodworking skill, and apparently a lot of it was honed because he had a pen pal in Mexico. Huh. Did you read about this?
No.
Where he had a friend in Mexico that he would write in Mexico to this farmer that he somehow knew. That he was just like, you know, and in perfect Spanish was just like, and one day we will overtopple our governments and the mountains will be free and the cactus will be free. Mm. And, the Mexican guy's like, well, he's sending me letter. Why is he sending me letter? But so what Ted Kaczynski got known for is these wooden cylinders that all the bombs were put inside of, right? Because he also made one for his own fucking mother, which is a bad present for your mother.
I mean, but it's nice to get her something, though.
Yeah.
It is, you know?
Yeah.
He severed ties quickly after. But he sent him a wood tube that just said, Montaneri Sempre Libere, which meant mountain men are always free.
Ugh. That's kind of fun. It's a fun message.
Nerdy and stupid.
Oh, yeah. Mountain men are always free. I agree with him.
So 1980 comes around after the president of... And that's what's amazing. He got to the president of United Airlines.
Right.
That's how far this guy could reach.
This is obviously before any major terrorist activities occurred on a plane, right? This is even before like Lockerbie and all that stuff. I feel like everyone was just kind of taking it easy, living that Hawaiian life, running airlines and stuff.
America was really easy in the 1970s.
Yeah, you should.
Man, nothing was going on. It wasn't like there were roving gangs and gas shortages. Jimmy Carter being a fucking flip-flopper.
Yeah, but even despite all that, the airlines were just like, oh, everything's just fine here. Dare I say, hunky dory.
Well, I remember when you could be able to like walk your grandmother onto the plane and then walk into the cockpit and shake the pilot's hands, and then sometimes they'll let you fly. I remember when I was a kid, you just go in the cockpit and the pilot, he kind of smelled like booze, but he was like, hey, pop up on my lap. And I popped up on his lap. And then what he did, he put his arms around my lower waist like it was a seatbelt. And he's like, you take the control. You take the damn control.
You were molested.
I flew the plane for 45 minutes.
Really?
And I was like, this is, you just can't do it anymore in this post-9/11 world, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, did you fit in the cockpit comfortably, or did you find it to be a tight squeeze, or?
It had, like, a smoking chair, and there was a game. They had been playing Monopoly for hours, and there was just some asleep woman in a lawn chair in there.
Interesting.
Very different times back then.
Yeah. I think you just kind of... screwed a wheel to the wall in your bedroom.
Yes.
And you just kind of turned that a little.
Yeah, and I walked in one of my father's stag parties for the police station.
Yeah. That's fun, though.
So in 1980, the FBI's Behavioral Sciences Unit comes on board. This is still, the Behavioral Sciences Unit was still fairly new at this time, but these people were extremely good at what they did. There are a ton of great books. There's Manhunter, there's Between Good and Evil. Read up on the Behavioral Sciences Unit. But they put forth a profile on this guy, and this is very early on. They've only got a few bombings so far, but their initial profile fucking nails Kaczynski.
They got it, huh?
They said he was an above average, he had above average intelligence, he had connections to academia, that he was kind of a neo-Luddite, where he just hated technology, and they had this guy absolutely nailed, but three years later...
You know, I was watching this doc, and one of the FBI analysts literally was just like, and when, as soon as we saw the first bomb, we knew, like, we had a nerd in our hands. He was just some kind of nerd. It was just, like, amazing. I was like, yeah!
Sounds like an OK Cupid situation. They just described the man that they loved, and they found him.
Yeah, but they were describing Paul Bunyan, but what they got was a Teddy fucking Kaczynski.
Well, yeah, I mean, everyone wants their nerd to still look like a jock.
Yeah.
That's most important.
Yeah, yeah, at the end of the day.
So this goes on for a couple years, and the BSU, they have their profile. This is what they're working with. This is who they're looking for. But other factions in the FBI decided that this was a dead end. This wasn't the guy they were looking for. They were looking instead for a blue-collar airplane mechanic.
What was the motive? What was the reason for that? So they were thinking workplace violence?
They were thinking that, he hated airlines, but he also hated universities for some reason.
Right. I'll tell you one thing.
He was afraid of planes, and he couldn't read.
So this is also when they put forth, in 1983, they set up a 1-800 hotline for the Unabomb Task Force, and they also put out a $1 million reward for anybody who happens to have any information leading to the arrest of the Unabomber.
I like the idea of somebody calling up the 1-800 hotline, but they forgot to hit the 9 instead of the 8. They were looking for a porno thing. And it was like, what am I wearing? Yeah, hood, yeah, I love that hoodie. Yeah,
tell me. Aviator glasses.
Yeah, you got a beard, you smell bad. Keep on going.
Or I also,
are you,
like,
are you jacking really, off right now, sir?
This is also a really good new way for jocks to get at nerds, is to call them up to the Unabomber hotline and have the police come and pick them up in the middle of school. They'll probably pee their pants and everybody will laugh.
Yeah, and then they'll smell like human feces and everyone will know it's them.
So the next bomb is mailed. He gets back to professors. He mails it to Professor Patrick Fisher at Vanderbilt. And this is just extraordinary bad luck that this bomb went off at this certain place. Because the teacher that was supposed to go to, the professor he was supposed to go to, he was in Puerto Rico at the time. Fisher was in Puerto Rico. So his secretary was in charge of opening all the mail,
a woman doing all the work again.
So the bomb explodes, it injures her face, it injures her arms, but here's what the bad luck was all about, is that the bomb had been mailed using canceled and insufficient postage. It never should have got there in the first place. But apparently the post guy felt like doing somebody a solid that day, or they just didn't check.
And
so,
that was literally the last time a mailman has ever done a favor.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel bad for mailmen, you know? That's what
I don't
been
feel bad for mailmen. They're all part of their own society.
Everyone's part of their own society, Henry. What does that mean?
Nah, comedians are loners. They're wolves put out in the world. Like,
you're in a sketch group
hosts
with 9 people.
Yes.
So this poor secretary, so this post office guy did a good job, a good thing. And
well, a secretary's first job is to possibly die for her boss.
Yeah.
It's secretary's half bodyguard.
It wasn't even supposed to go to this guy. Kaczynski didn't intend for it to go to this guy. He intended for the package to be returned to the fake address because of the insufficient postage. That was supposed to go to electrical engineering professor Leroy Wood Burnson of Brigham Young.
Another Wood.
Another Wood.
So and a this Mormon.
Yeah, no doubt about
Brigham
it.
Brigham Young, yeah.
So he was trying to get goofy with it? He was just trying to have fun? Be like,
he
I'm
was doing a hook shot.
Yeah, it sounds like the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar move here.
Yeah.
Revolutionary.
He was pulling a Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah.
So a couple months later, he goes back to Berkeley, and engineering professor Diogenes Angelakos.
Now, this guy literally had stuffed grape leaves for feet. He was so Greek.
This is when Kaczynski, not all of his bombs were mail bombs.
This was some like of a them feta were cheese bomb planted. Or something like that?
Some of them were Jaeger bombs.
Ooh, that's very popular, though. He was 20 years ahead of his time.
So some of these he just planted in these universities, which, you know, meant he did travel a fair amount.
So Kaczynski dropped this one off himself? He didn't rely on the postal service?
No, he didn't do this via the next couple of them are both ones that he delivered himself. He delivered this one to the Mathematics and Computer Science Personnel Office.
Do you think that's because he was so upset they blooped on the first and the last time he tried to get fun with the postal service? He's like, I'll just do it myself then.
Yeah. I think that's also, like, there's a certain point because part of the way they break down this type of killer is, like, they talk about, like, bomber killers, is that they're very detached and they like to, like, stand behind and watch the chaos happen. Right. And, like, in his case, he was a missionary killer. So he was doing it for a purpose. But I imagine there's a point where he's like, because we see this all the time. His confidence is ramping up. Mm-hmm. He's starting to believe that he can control what other people do around him. So I'm certain he wants to now get in the mix a little bit and then drop it off. So maybe, like, not that they'll see you, but so he can watch them pick up the box and it'll get his stinky little boner hard.
Well, he's a celebrity. He wants to walk the red carpet. He's got a big movie premiere coming out, you know? What's the news media like at this point? Unabomber is all over him? Are they covering it?
No, the whole, the airlines thing, that was a big deal when
this
happened.
This is before Twitter and...
Yeah, of course.
Things,
so, you know, it's when a bombing would happen and it came out that it was the Unabomber, then they definitely said, like, Unabomber strikes again.
I see.
But, you know, it's not 24 hours, not a 24/7 news cycle.
So it wasn't on par with, like, Richard Ramirez or...
No.
There was Son of Sam.
No.
There wasn't that chilling effect yet on society.
No, but the manhunt was constantly building.
Yeah.
The more that these popped up, because then it became the biggest manhunt known to man.
So he leaves this strange apparatus in the faculty lounge at Berkeley in the electrical engineering department. It said that it had like a handsaw grip on it, and it was a weird, oddly shaped metal container. So this professor, he just walks over and picks it up, and when he picks up the grip, a pipe bomb inside blew up this guy's face, his hand, his arm were all damaged. Flesh was ripped from his fingers. His tendons were all fucked up.
I'm getting hungry.
Yeah. It's pretty appetizing stuff.
And it could have been much, much worse because what was actually inside this apparatus was a big tank of gasoline. But the reason why it didn't explode was because he filled the tank to the very top and there wasn't enough oxygen in the gas tank for it to explode.
Right.
This is the problem when you are a nerd bombing other nerds. Sometimes these nerds are going to school you in how you're actually very stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. This just seems like a very rookie mistake. Everybody knows that about gasoline.
Yeah, the victim himself, Professor Angelakos, he said, the idiot filled the tank to the top. He didn't leave enough air for the gasoline to explode.
Boom! It seems a little cocky for a bomb victim. I'm sorry.
And this time, this is when he starts putting little false clues in there. He wants to try to trick these guys, and he does a damn good job of it for a very long time, tricking all these investigators.
What are some of these false clues?
He left a note with the bomb that said, "It works! I told you it would." And then he signed the initials RV.
Now, what's RV stand for?
He did that to possibly implicate these other previous Berkeley colleagues. And Robert Vaught.
Yes, RV.
So now he's trying to frame up other people for these crimes.
Yeah.
Just throwing a bunch of roadblocks in the way.
It just gets to a point where he's getting like a little Riddler with it.
Yeah.
I don't think he's doing enough damage.
I do think he's wearing a green suit, though.
Yeah.
Just a green.
He's green from the moss growing on his body because he's washing himself with his pee-pee water.
Yeah, exactly. How didn't the note explode? How doesn't the note explode in an explosion like this?
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, I guess if you attach it to a certain spot, if you look at how the...
I feel like if our show becomes bombing technique driven, we're going to get taken off the air, right?
Yeah, we can't do that.
I'm talking about note survival.
I'm just saying we can't go through diagrams one on one, but I imagine it's some like what you do, how an envelope bomb is, you open it up and it goes like, boom, boom. You go like, oh, letter for grandma. And then you open it up and then you don't have hands anymore.
Ah, very scientific. Thank you, Henry.
So the next one comes 3 years later. He waits 3 years before his next bombing.
What are we at?
This
now?
Is
we're
when
at
he's
six?
Really getting heavy into his ribbon dancing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
These 3 years.
Are we at six bombs now?
I don't know. Roughly. I think so. So okay. Something like that.
And how does he have the ability to just chill out for 3 years? He's doing nothing.
He's honing his skills.
He's just tinkering around.
Well, here's what's going on with his bombs, and this is a part of his ingeniousness, but also the reason why this took him so long, and the reason why there were so many failed attempts, because he was working on all of this without any electricity. No yes. electricity, mm-hmm. no running water. He's very meticulous about it. He wants to make sure that they're all built exactly the way he feels they should be built. And he is also building them with a message. You know, he wants yes. the note to it's, explode. If he also, wants the note to be there,
I
so
think he's just lazy and he wants to stop working at sundown.
No way, buddy. He's also working That's on it. His manifesto.
Yeah.
He's got his journals. There were several other bombs that he had in there that he was probably testing bombs. He was catching squirrels to fuck.
He was catching squirrels to have sex with.
Yeah.
I don't know if that
about
was
it before. It's the fleshlight of the forest. You get the biggest, thickest, fattest squirrel, you feed it for a bunch of months, yeah. right? And then one time you put a little Valium in the food and then the squirrel gets all lethargic and then you go and I mean it's one and done.
Well, I guess depending on how, into it the squirrel is.
Yeah, it's true. And also depending on whether or not how big old Teddy K's tube is.
Yeah, it's probably. I would not be surprised if he just whipped out a huge donker.
I would think he has a gigantic cock.
Yeah. You never know, though. You never know.
It's always the weird, skinny white guy.
It is.
He's bulbous fucking baby arm now.
So Air Force captain and Berkeley grad student John Hauser goes into the computer lab at Berkeley. He sees a three-ring binder out. And, you know, it's not odd for a three-ring binder to be out. But for some reason, he picks it up. He opens it, and the binder explodes. It's another bomb that he's left.
I think that the Unabomber Ted Kaczynski is really making a message here against snooping. Is that your three-ring binder? Do you know who's three? Is it yours? Does it have your name?
P's and Q's.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. It's just him teaching. Yeah, he's like an Ann Landers.
So this guy lost four fingers. Mm. He lost partial vision in his left eye. He had medial nerve damage. Blood was spurting out of his arm as soon as it happened. And here's the sad thing about it. He was going to be an astronaut.
Oh, why do you? What's gonna stop him from being an astronaut?
He has six fingers.
Oh,
it's tough to be in space. You gotta screw stuff in, and
you tie three pencils to the other side. Those are like fingers.
Yeah,
right?
I mean that's true. If he's in space, and you know, maybe he can just kind of like glue some things onto him. I don't know how space
being
works.
Being an astronaut's really yeah. scary. He dodged a bullet.
Yeah, exactly. He would have died probably in like what Apollo 11 or whatever the one. Blew up.
They
yeah.
were all fine.
Yeah. No, not all of them.
The Challenger was bad.
Challenger, yeah.
It was also called the Challenger, so.
Yeah, that's yeah. true. Yeah, they should have gone with, like, the Easy Train. That would have been a nicer ride, I think.
So this bomb was much more, I mean, it was much more powerful from all the rest of them because he started using better materials. He started using ammonium nitrate, started using aluminum powder, the shrapnel. He used tacks, lead, nails. And
I also mentioned because there was a period of time when they said that he did go and attempt to make human connections in the town that he was like 50 yards from.
Yeah,
so he'd walk right. over there and there was this woman talking about it. She's like, oh, Ted used to come in here and he'd talk about books and it was all over my head, but I gave him some rice.
Yeah.
Fun. Must have been fun. What a barrel of laughs.
I would have loved to see him lying this whole time. Be like, yeah, I need a... Yeah, like cold crated nails, and then some. I run construction.
I mean, I run construction. With a bunch of this stuff.
I'm Ted. Yeah, Ted from the foam rubber plant. Yeah, oh, you remember me?
You remember me? Oh, that's bad. I wish you didn't.
Dang. Oh, dang.
My name's Fred Malinsky. I need all these nails for nail collection.
Frogs. Yeah. I don't know.
He also apparently befriended a small boy in the town.
Which what do you mean?
He befriended a small boy.
Did the boy change his will to murder? Because if he didn't, he's not a very cute kid.
No, the kid was probably like, yeah, get him, Ted. Yeah, fuckers, yeah. Get those fuckers.
So now we're finally getting into the fatalities.
Yes, first kill, finally, Christ.
Well, he's done a lot of damage, and I think we've been lucky so far.
Yeah, so far. So he starts planting bombs in parking lots, and the parking lots of computer stores. Hmm. First one he plants in front of the Rentec computer store in Sacramento. It was a block of nails a block of wood with nails coming up from it. You know the type of thing. You know, you run over, it's going to ruin your car tire.
Right.
So, yeah.
So the owner, Hugh Scrutton, he walked over, and as soon as he picked up the chunk of wood, the entire thing exploded, blew off most of his hand, fragmented his organs, impaled his heart. Ooh. He died almost instantly.
Nerd on nerd violence.
It is a shame.
That is sad.
It is a damn shame. Mm-hmm. They should be getting along. They should all be taking care of each other.
I agree.
So this one had sharp-edged chunks of metal, nails, splinters, had 3 10-inch pipes with a mix of potassium sulfate, potassium chloride.
What are those, like blade saw, like pogs jammers? You remember those jammers?
Yeah, jammers.
I do want to see, a live report of somebody, 50 feet away from it, just zoom in on this. This is where I got my splinter, right here. If you zoom in, yeah, that's, and they say splinters are one of the worst pains humans can have next to paper cuts.
I another victim of the Unabomber?
So I'll be here all day if you want to call or interview for interviews.
Ask me questions something, you know. That was my block of wood he ruined.
Yeah.
So anybody who's researched the Unabomber case, or anybody who was alive at any time in the mid-90s, then you know about the sketch. The famous sketch of the Unabomber.
That was what I had on the folder that I kept all of my Unabomber clippings on. I took the picture of the sketch and I duct taped it to the front of the folder.
Yeah. So you may be asking yourself, why is it so shitty?
Yeah.
Why was it so wrong?
Why was it so cool? That's what I want to know.
It was cool as shit.
Yeah, it made him look like a supervillain.
Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of looks like a Mexican Lone Ranger.
Yeah, sure.
And the reason why it's so bad is because the only witness there ever was to any of the Unabomber's crimes was a secretary outside of CAMS Inc., which was in Salt Lake City. She saw a guy with a hooded sweatshirt and sunglasses put something down on the ground. And she said he was 6 feet tall, he was about 165, aviator sunglasses, wearing a hoodie. And she was all the way across the parking lot from this guy.
Also,
she did not get a good look at him.
About secretaries is you don't want them to have that long of vision, because as soon as they start seeing freedom, they will go for it.
I know.
They are your slave. They are your soldier. They are your servant. They are your lover.
I think you're going to have a lot of sexual harassment claims when you're the boss of Henry Zebrowski, Inc.
So the vice president of CAMS, Gary Wright, drives his truck into the parking lot, sees the piece of wood with the nails sticking out. It's the exact same thing. He kicks it. He's going to kick it out of the way, and it blows up with the same force, but Gary Wright survived. This is what he said. He said, at first, I thought I'd been shot. I started to bounce around quite a bit, and I could see my pants were missing from about my knee down my left leg. My shoes had been burned, and there were quite a few holes in my body.
Kick it. Damn. That's what you got to do. If you see something, never pick it up. If you have to touch it, give it a kick.
Yeah. You know what I would say? You know what's a good thing to do? At a thing that you don't know what it is, and you're not sure if you want to sure if it's a bomb or not, throw a banana at it.
Yep.
From 20 yards away and see what happens.
Let the banana take the hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this guy Wright, 11 years later, during the trial when they were doing victim impact statements, he said, I still remove pieces of shrapnel that continue to rise from below the surface of my skin.
It's kind of cool, though.
This is also another way, and I'm not going to really put this out there because I don't believe you should murder anybody, but if you're having a hard time breaking up with somebody and you see a mysterious package, you could also tell them to go kick it.
Yeah.
Well, you could, but then don't. If you are that person, never kick something that someone tells you to kick.
How secure is your relationship?
Not. They broke up, Henry.
I'm just saying.
Then it's not secure because they're broken up. No one should kill anybody.
I'm not saying. I'm just saying. But think about it. Your partner dies a horrific bombing tragedy. You get all the points. But I'm just saying, I'm not saying
do it. It's not at midnight.
It's not the Comedy Central show, which we should be on, by the way.
Yeah.
Please. Fans, petition us for At Midnight. I guess they're active on Twitter. You can reach Chris Hardwick there.
Yeah, that's where they get all their material from.
Right. But if you... if you tell your boyfriend or ex-girlfriend to go kick something and they don't kick it and they say, you go kick it, then how are you going to get out of you not kicking it?
Hmm. Just don't kick it. Run away.
Run away. Get out of town. Tell them you forgot your bike at the bus stop. And then you just never go back and you never see them again. You say goodbye to all your stuff.
So the next victim, this guy is definitely his nerdiest victim. His name is Dr. David Glertner.
Yeah.
No.
It's not a good name.
Glertner.
Because, you know, they call him, like, the Glertner, and he had, like, one of those backpacks that were, like, 75 pounds.
Just sounds like at some point some unlucky bastard got a Glertner gun for, like, World War II, and when you shoot it, the barrel just droops and makes a sad sound.
Excuse me, Mrs. Harris, you forgot to assign homework.
Shut up, Glertner. I hope someone blows you up one day, you big old nerd.
I don't mean it. Alert.
I just want to let you guys know that I have cut my own underwear, so in an attempt of a Grundy, I will not be feeling it. Thank you.
So he got blown up pretty bad. He did do kind of a badass thing. He drug himself down 5 flights of stairs and made it to the campus medical center. But he has the saddest quote. He said, "There are computer scientists far more distinguished than I. I don't even like computers that much."
He didn't even have the ego to get blown up. No, bro, this is your shot at the big leagues. You got blown up.
But you know what? It really inspired me to really get into the electric guitar. And so you'll see me on my new cover band, the Glertner Boys. We'll be covering the likes of the Wilkes Brothers and Travis Whitley, the tuba sensation.
He acted like Macklemore after he won the VMA award for best rapper. He's like, "I am sorry, I am not the best rapper. I do not...
You're a computer scientist far more distinguished than I."
I just want to say thank you. I just want to say thank you to whoever sent the bomb. I never nice, thought I'd dude. Be... doing this interview number one. No one ever talked to me before.
All right, no one's really given me a Band-Aid yet. I'd really appreciate one of those as well.
And, you know, and Kaczynski doubled up on this guy because not only did he blow him up, but he also called up Glertner's brother, who was a geneticist, and just told him, "You are next."
But he was too busy on a motorcycle with a woman in a halter top smoking a cigarette next to Yosemite Canyon.
Yeah. They don't call me Glertner. They call me Mr. G. Yeah.
Have you met me? Yeah. My name's G. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How'd you find out my last name was Glertner?
Your last name's Glertner, and she leaves him. Come on.
That's how nerdy these people were. This is where, Ted thought, Ted was cool.
Yeah.
First time in his life.
So the next fatality, this is when he's on his run. This is 1994. All of these bombings have been...
How much time has passed here?
Now? Oh, man. So far, this has been 16 years. He started in 1978. And this is in 1994, so he's been going for 16 years.
On average,
now.
How long did he take between each bomb?
I would
some
say
were months and some were years.
Yeah,
right.
I would say on average, because there was a 6-year gap between one. There was a 3-year gap between another, and then other times he was doing them, just like month after month. But you don't really know why. We do kind of know why how he chose these people. He would go and look through directories at the libraries. He would look through these printed directories. He would order them and look through all these printed directories of professors all throughout the United States. And even though he didn't necessarily know much about these people, he would just see, Glertner, associate professor of computers.
And from his mind, he's watched. He's like, "Yeah, I'm going to get all these jocks. Yeah."
Yeah, yeah.
He just keeps bombing worse nerds than him.
Because in his mind, these were the jocks. So it's December 10th, 1994, and we're getting real close to him being captured here. But he sends a mail bomb to Thomas Moser, who he was unfairly depicted as helping Exxon Valdez clean up their image after the big spill in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. So Ted zeroed in on that guy.
So Ted was... He was a member of ELF now? He was like a member of the Weathered Underground?
He thought he was liberal all of a sudden?
I mean...
But we said at the same time, the Weather Underground was like full of a bunch of people writhing around each other, having sex and doing
about,
acid and having a great time and killing people.
Yeah, blowing up. Well, they never actually killed anyone. Well, the group did.
No, Ted had an old watermelon that was his best friend.
Right, that's true.
In his stupid little cabin next to a fucking highway.
Yeah. Oh, and watermelons. That's a short relationship, you know? Once you drill the hole in it, maybe 48 hours. Gets all soggy.
Sweet, sweet 48 hours, though. That's a honeymoon I'd like to take.
It's very interesting the way that he chose these people, because he does choose, I guess in this situation, he can be like, I'm the good guy. And I guess technically this is the best, this makes him, this is the worst person that he's sent a bomb to, even though the guy was just doing his job.
Yeah, but it wasn't true.
Yeah, he wasn't involved in it.
Right.
But
the media had said something that he was.
Some shitty environmental magazine.
Right.
That had said that he was very much involved in helping clean up the image.
So basically, Kaczynski was just getting environmental magazines delivered to his house, and then he was buying a bunch of nails all the time.
He wasn't getting anything at his house. He was doing the thing. He went to Barnes & Noble, and he sat around and acted like it was a library.
Right, right.
Reading all the magazines for free, taking advantage of our technological advancements in society.
He's the only person to walk into a Barnes & Noble, and the staff members are just like, why don't you use the bathroom? Go to the bathroom. Feel free.
So, despite the company's name being actually incorrectly spelled, this guy opened it up anyway, and the bomb was so powerful that his head was almost severed from his body, and his hands barely connected to his fingers, and his intestines were just a mess.
But I would also say this is, too, this is also a good kind of an interesting, serious lesson of, like, don't open things that aren't spelled correctly. Don't open things that look kind of weird. If you're not expecting a package, you're a part of the takedown of the technocracy. So don't open it.
And judging by Marcus's description, don't open boxes with your teeth. Good Lord, how did his head almost get blown off?
I mean, he packed it with razor blades, metal, nails. It was a vicious bomb.
Razor blades. That seems he's stepping it up.
Yeah.
And it was also a shame because he had his favorite hat on. Not to make fun of the victim.
No, never.
So this is what his wife Susan said. This is how she described the blast. She said, "A thunderous noise resounded throughout the house. A white mist was pouring from the kitchen doorway. When the mist settled to the floor, a horrifying image emerged. My husband's body, face up on the floor, his stomach slashed open. His face was partially blackened and distorted. Blood. Horror.
And then I mounted him, and I felt his rock-hard love feeling pressing against my soaking wet ocean-like vulva. He entered me. That was the first time I ever came."
Henry?
What's happened? I thought I lost you guys.
Romance.
I thought we dropped the thing.
Romance, Henry.
No, we're just, you know,
sitting in it.
Being romantic.
Oh, good. You guys having sex?
No, man!
We're fingering each other over there.
Stop it. Oh, my God. Way off subject. But my friend Dave, who designed the graphics for Game Company Radio, he saw a man get knocked out at a bar in Menominee, Wisconsin by a woman because the woman was leaning over the bar, and he stuck two fingers in her butthole.
Whoa!
She turned around.
She's a possess you?
I don't know.
Bold!
She's a big Wisconsin woman. She knocks him out, and then the whole time she's just screaming, "He put fingers in my butthole! He put his fingers in my butthole!" So that was a funny scene. Anyway, off topic. Yes.
So next, his third fatality and his last victim was on April 24th, 1995. This guy, his name was Gilbert Murray, and he was supposed to be part of the timber industry, and of course we know that, you know, Ted was a big fan of nature, you know, compared himself to Thoreau, and he decided that this guy needed to die. One staffer, when they got the package, the staffer said, "Well, this is heavy. Must be a bomb."
God,
again,
every time.
And it was in extreme bad taste because Oklahoma City had happened 4 days earlier.
He also, after the Oklahoma City bombing happened, Ted Kaczynski was so fucking stinky jealous of Timothy McVeigh, because he couldn't believe it. He watched the news, and apparently he flipped out and was like, "No, I'm the ultimate bomber. I'm the bomber." And it was all...
Oh, it's like those world's fattest people. You know, there has to be someone who's who's like, I'm 893 pounds, and someone's 898 pounds, and they're like, I'll get there. Whatever. But now, McVeigh, he got caught very shortly after
2 days
he was
after.
Arrested.
Yeah, it was almost immediate.
The Unabomber's name was tossed around in that situation, right?
I'm sure it was.
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely. But then they were like, no, he was making he was whittling his bombs.
Yeah,
right.
These are handmade bombs. This was like nothing even close to what McVeigh did. Although this one did destroy the entire office in which it was open. Destroyed all the furniture, blew a hole in the wall. By far his most powerful bomb to date. But he's also, I guess, he's starting to get cocky. And this is when he decides it's finally time to unveil himself to the world. And this is when he mails Industrial Society and Its Future to the New York Times and the Washington Post.
Which sounds like a prog rock album.
Yeah,
with
definitely.
Trip Skippleman on the double bass.
Ooh, cool.
Industrial Society and Its Future.
I like that.
The manifesto is a tough read. There's certain interesting things in there. It's basically he's anti-technology in a way that I don't particularly totally glean, but it seems the way he kind of the summary is that he believes that technology takes away our individuality, and that once that happens, we'll be a part of a gigantic technocratic dictatorship.
Yes.
Henry, I want to ask you this question, because I feel like you'll have a good answer for it. What was more difficult to read, the Kaczynski manifesto, let's say, who else? Let's say Zodiac, maybe some BTK in there, or the letters that Chris Farley wrote to his parents from rehab.
Oh, my God. The thing is that
that's cruel, man.
It was so sad. Henry and I are both huge Chris Farley fans.
He's the letters Chris Farley's wrote to his parents were all like, I do well today.
Yes.
Me hope, me don't drink no mo. Like, it was all, he wrote like a child.
But Kaczynski was slightly, what made his manifesto so difficult to read?
Snooze fest.
Yeah, it's very dry.
You put bit of violence in there. You put one mention of a nipple, you have my full undivided attention. Right. Or a reptilian drawings.
Sure.
Would have helped.
So the number one complaint is that he's boring.
I mean, he was a little bit racist, but it was mostly against these things called the leftists, is what he just used when it seemed like it was just, that was just code for the cool group of kids that he couldn't be a part of when he went to school at Berkeley and at Harvard in the 1960s. But just means people that don't wear bras.
It seems like the ex-Son Valdez guy, that's an interesting choice if he was so against the leftists.
I mean, it wasn't leftist, it's weird how he says leftist, because when he says leftist, he's talking about the over-socialization. That's the word he keeps using over and over again, over-socialization. It's leftist and environmentalism don't have anything in common as far as he's concerned. Henry, actually, I think this really does what he feels about leftists.
All right.
Henry, why don't you read that part that I've got italicized there?
The moral code of our society is so demanding that no one can think, feel, and act in a completely moral way. Some people are so highly socialized that the attempt to think, feel, and act morally imposes a severe burden on them. In order to avoid feelings of guilt, they continually have to deceive themselves about their own motives and find moral explanations for feelings and actions that in reality, you listen. They have a non-moral origin. We use the term over-socialized to describe such people. And I want to be with Ashley. And I want to go to the malt shop with the seniors. And they never invited me because the math club all smelled like milk. And there's nothing I can do about smelling like milk. My family's home smelled like milk.
Ben!
Oh, Jesus. Did I miss something?
I mean, it's all in the delivery, because it can either be delivered by a nerd mathematician, but you can also deliver it like, the moral code of our society is so demanding that no one can think, feel, or act in a completely moral way.
I agree.
Some people are so highly socialized that the attempt to think, feel, and act morally imposes a severe burden on them. In order to avoid feelings of guilt, they continually have to deceive themselves about their own motives and find moral explanations for feelings and actions that in reality have a non-moral origin. We use the term over-socialized to describe such people.
Ted, sir,
did you wanted 20 on pump 7?
On pump 5!
I don't know, man. Give him that gas for free. He's got some cool ideas.
Well, because what he was saying is that basically the what he says is like socialized means that the government wants to homogenize by making us believe that everyone is equal.
I'm sure that he went out and tried to play a pickup game of basketball and just no one chose him, and then he was like against it.
You don't think I don't have the reach? I have long arms, and I have a vertical of at least 4 inches. Oh.
Yeah, so socializing meant that, you know, like, he just thought that they were, in order to make everybody equal, which is what the leftist wants, is that what it does is make sure that nobody's special. Right. And that means it ruins the idea of an individualist, which is what he technically believed himself to be. That was the problem.
I agree with him. There's only one. There was only one Ted Kaczynski, so he wasn't an individualist.
Yeah, there was only one Peyton Manning, and he's a good man. And there was Lauren McCall, who also just died.
Lauren McCall?
Who?
Never mind.
So there was a ton of debate as to whether they should publish this thing or not. You know, they think, you know, is this giving in to a terrorist if we publish this? But eventually they decide that if we publish this thing, then maybe someone will recognize this guy's writing.
Because he said that he would kill in 90 days.
Yeah, if they didn't publish it, he would kill in 90 days.
Classic.
Yeah, and when there was a debate going on as to whether they should publish it, you know who came forward? Fucking Bob Guccione.
Guccione!
Oh, Guccione, yeah. The fucking owner of Penthouse Magazine. He says, I'll fucking publish it.
I'll put it out there as solid, bushy as beavers got in all Los Angeles.
That's, and beavers are found in the woods. So isn't that nice?
So Bob Guccione, he volunteers to publish it, but Kaczynski,
what a weird day in the editing room, if the editor's office did publish, they'd be like, okay, we're going to do the double dongs with the two chicks on the bikes, then we're going to do the spunk shot with Pamela, she's only 18, or 17 and a half, we'll call her, she'll say she's 18.
Said they're kicking me out of the hotel, guys.
Yeah, we got
Pamela,
one chick.
Shut up!
We got a new chick who actually likes to get booted, like literally she likes a boot in her pussy. Unabomber's going to be doing an entire memoir in the middle
there.
It's
going to be 42 pages of the magazine.
And then we'll do one with a chick eating a cherry.
Can we do piss this month?
Next month.
Hey, we do piss every month.
Every month.
Well, Kaczynski, he replied. He said, you know what? I'm very gracious, but it's not a very respectable publication.
So how did the guy reach out to the Unabomber?
You know, I'm not sure on that one.
Must have been publicly.
Yeah, it has to have been, had to have been a public thing.
Imagine how smelly just the letter was. You know, like you just get him like...
From which, Guccione or Kaczynski? One guy's full of spunk and lube, and the other he's got nothing but nails and wood and gas in his hands.
So he said that, you know, Penthouse was less respectable. So he said that if it is published in Penthouse and only Penthouse, that he reserved the right to plant one and only one bomb intended to kill after the manuscript was published. Just one. That was his bargain.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Ted Kaczynski's entire plan with the manifesto, or at least his like overarching view of it, was that revolution...
First, can I just say this, actually, now that I think about it? That's how bad Penthouse was. he was gonna get to kill one person. This is not a. That's an insane deal.
That's a negotiation. That's a weird negotiation. Okay, you can kill one nerd, all right, and that's only because we hate nerds here,
right? And because our sales are worse than Playboy's.
Yeah. But I also like to bring up how many less boobies and beavers are we gonna see this week with this manifesto clogging up my penthouse thing. So what we're gonna have to do is make the type really, really small, and for that. You can also kill one boy, because that is half a man.
I do feel bad for the poor person. If it wasn't Penthouse, it would flip in through while rock hard, like, ooh, hardcore erotica. I mean, the fetish that this would lead to. If you just ended up coming a whole bunch to Kaczynski's manifesto. That's not good.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to take down the fucking technocratic industrial society.
What do you think?
Fucking take that technocracy.
Do you think Hustler would have gotten him two kills?
Oh, so eventually the New York Times and the Washington Post decided to both publish it. They decided to both split publishing costs, and they thought, of course, someone's going to recognize it. And someone did. David Kaczynski, Ted's brother, recognized it through one strange little phrase, because he was reading it and he thought, like, this is familiar. You know, like, I know Ted kind of writes stuff like this. They had been estranged for a while at this point.
Well, because he cut off the whole family, even though his mom was paying him.
Yeah.
His mom was giving him his money throughout this whole time. And he had cut off his brother finally because his brother got married and he was jealous. His brother meeting a woman.
Thanks for bringing that up. I forgot. Trust fund. This is just a trust fund kid.
He's just another trust fund kid.
The most pitiful trust fund kid possible.
I hate BTK because of his puns, and I don't like Kaczynski because he's a trust fund kid.
At least his poetry was short.
And at least he had a job and he was working hard, you know?
So the one thing that tipped Ted's brother off that this was actually Ted was one weird little reversal of a saying. The saying, you can't have your cake and eat it too. Kaczynski, however, and Kaczynski's mother both said it, you can't eat your cake and have it too.
That was it.
That was it.
Also, because his brother had been getting, up until the point they had severed their relationship, he would send his brothers these ranting letters about, like, you know, the government and technology. And so basically, this is a good lesson. If you're going to be a bomber, which I don't think you should be.
No.
But you leave your philosophy out of, like, your emails to your, like, your friend. You don't flirt with people and don't catch up with people by telling them how you're going to take down the technocracy.
Well, David, before he calls the FBI, he wants to make absolutely sure that it's Ted. And so he hires a private investigator. The private investigator checks him out, looks through, compares the letters that David already has to the Unabomber Manifesto. And they just said, you know, it's almost certain that this is the same guy.
A private investigator was the first one to kind of solve the case.
Yeah, to have that moment of, yes, this is probably the same guy. And so David goes to the FBI, and, you know, this is three years after Waco. You know, this is four years after Ruby Ridge. The FBI and the ATF, who were both heavily involved in this case, don't have the best reputation at this moment.
Right.
No.
So David decides, he says, you know, listen, we're going to do this, but you cannot go in there guns a-blazing. You have to do this delicately. If you try going in there guns a-blazing, he will blow himself and you up with it.
Absolutely. Can you imagine also, like, you imagine that the whole shed is probably booby-trapped. Oh, he's got a bunch of shit going on.
Yeah. If he knows you're coming, then it's going to be bad. So that's when the stakeout begins.
Ooh.
And they stick.
This is just a Dan Aykroyd movie that should have happened.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
It is. So they started just moving FBI members into town. And this is what a guy said, this guy Robert Graysmith said in a book, A Unabomber, A Desire to Kill. He said they were mountain men who were too tidy, postal workers far off their roots, tourists out of season, lumberjacks, and prospectors.
I'd like to see your finest hole that has the fish. Me and my buddy Craig here have come all the way from Munkatunka, Idaho. And we are here to do some fishing because if I ain't fishing, I'm driving my truck.
Yeah, well, what's Craig's last name? It's Beglaglerler.
Beglaglerler. Hey, isn't it? Isn't it, Craig? What did you say?
Beglaglerler. Beglaglerler.
That better be my name. Anyways, let's go. I want to see a deer in the forest.
So people in the town immediately knew something was weird. You know, everyone had
the town turned into Twin Peaks.
Yeah. They had people with snowmobiles that were brand new. But they didn't really know what was up. But had they, you know, known Ted a little bit better and had they actually liked
just
him.
Just catching each other in, like, fishing nets and, like, all covered in neon gear, like, for hunting and stuff.
Want to see a bunch of cops or FBI, ATF people putting the snowmobiles in the water.
Wow. These are the craziest jet skis I've ever seen.
They just kind of drowned, huh? Weird.
I do most of my hunting in Key West.
They finally get a tip off on how to get Ted out of the apartment because they waited for I mean, days upon days for Ted to come out, but he never did. And they had sharpshooters on him. They had all sorts of things. He's not coming out. He's got his shit and piss bucket in there. He's got no reason to come out.
Yeah, but I mean, he would have to run out of food at some point. He would have to come out at some time.
He would have to come out sometime, but you know how the ATF gets. They're very impatient.
What do they have to do? you got your whole life.
They are clocked hourly.
Yeah,
and that's the problem. So they get it. They reach double time at a certain point, and they can't pay that.
So they get this guy. His name's Butch Gehring, and Butch tells him that, you know, Ted's very worried about the boundaries between his land and the government's land. Apparently, his land bumped up against some government land. So they sent in a park ranger with a map, saying like, "Hey, Ted, can you come on out? You know, there's." You know, we want to ask you some questions about your land.
Ted, I know how concerned you are. There's a bunny choking on a strawberry out here, and you need to come see it as it dies.
Yeah, got to.
So he comes outside, and they immediately handcuff him. And they take him, while they're searching the cabin, they take him to the local police station, and they set this woman with him. Her name's Alice DeLong. She's an FBI agent. She fed him. She held a can of soda up to his mouth and gave him something to drink. And she said that, okay, this is what she said about it. She said, "I felt as he droned on about cooking turnips and carrots using limited facilities as if I were on a bad date."
That's hilarious.
Which is like the one woman he went on a date with back in the day, because it says here so he was talking about how to cook turnips and carrots. And it's just him just been like, "You wanted to cook a turnip until you hope that it gets white. And carrots can be so soft and sweet you'd think you're eating candy."
Wow.
But they're carrots.
It is the most boring thing to cook, and it's certainly the most boring thing to discuss cooking.
Yep. Gotta wash it in the stream. Can't trust the aluminum in the water.
I mean, at that point, if you're actually on a real day with him and you're not working for the government, you just want him to get to the bomb part. Just for an exciting time.
If you're 34 and single, I'll date anybody. You know what I'm saying?
Well, he knows how to cook.
34 and single, sign me up for that man. Back. You know, Mondays.
I know.
I'm sorry, I was being Kathy.
Hang in there, you know.
That's the only men that are out there. They're either good, they're either married or gay or taken.
Yeah.
And I'm going to eat mint chocolate ice cream and go to sleep tonight. Isn't that right, girls?
Yeah.
That is so funny. That's funny. God, I love working here at the shit factory.
So, Vista Long, she continued, "He smelled like warm dirt."
Which is code for shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, night soils, they called it.
Yeah.
He smelled like warm dirt and was so filthy that even his long eyelashes were caked with soot above the bluest eyes I've ever seen.
Oh.
He was missing a front tooth.
Oh.
Why is she in love with him?
If it would have ended with "above the bluest eyes I've ever seen," then you'd think. Because warm dirt, I kind of like the smell of warm dirt. Dirt smells good.
No.
I love the smell of dirt.
You're wrong.
You grew up with horses, though, and a pig was your father.
That's the whole thing about it.
Who doesn't love the smell of dirt?
No one likes it.
You don't like
it? I like the smell of women's shampoo and their clothes coming out of the dryer.
Yeah, I like that too.
Eucalyptus, or you know, something that really makes you feel clean and not disgusting.
Yeah, but y'all
baked goods.
I love baked goods.
Y'all don't like how dirt smells.
No,
I will say I've never smelt it because that would I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, I also don't lay down in graves in order to relax, Marcus.
Right.
Well, dirt can smell very nice.
Yeah, it's actually
the ones who are wrong.
Well, it's death. Dirt is just a bunch of death that's been anyway.
It smells wonderful.
It's just old bones and bugs.
Yeah, that's all it is. Just dirt. It's just stupid dirt.
Right.
I like the smell of pizza.
Oh, pizza's great.
I enjoy all of these smells as well.
I'm just saying.
This is sometimes it's funny. Sometimes Marcus reveals himself.
I have I'm not the only one that thinks it smells good. Anyways, they confiscated over 700 items from his 10-foot by 12-foot cabin, and they found a ready-to-mail bomb beneath his bed. Any day, he was about to mail out another bomb. They don't know where, but he had one ready to mail out, and he was already working on the one after that.
I feel like you don't have to put it underneath your... That's like, you know, shutting the bathroom door when you're the only one home.
Well,
who's going
very,
in there?
It's a very small apartment. It's a very small hovel.
Oh, so you're talking under bed storage.
Under bed storage, yeah.
I see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He wasn't trying to hide it from nobody.
Okay.
No, and he didn't... He wasn't really getting all the stuff from Crate and Barrel in order to organize it as well.
Right, right. That's a good point, yeah.
And it's also, at this time, they arrest this guy and they start looking at Ted Kaczynski's history, and they, for a brief moment, they thought he might be the Zodiac.
Okay.
Because a lot of... he was in Berkeley at the same time as the Zodiac killings. They're both in cryptography. Because, like I said in the last episode, a lot of his journals were written in very intense, very complicated code. However, he did keep the code key handy, so it was very
easy.
So
he wouldn't forget his own stupid code? What a fucking nerd.
That's
like
ridiculous.
These guys that, like, well, you know those guys you would have like their like locker combination taped to their bag?
Yeah,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's
yeah.
Like, here you go, bullies. This is how you fucking open up my locker and then shove me in it.
Do you want to go into that true story that happened to you?
No.
Any further, or
no? I used laughter as medicine,
good.
And I used togetherness as a blanket.
Good, good. So he just kept the code right there.
Yeah, just kept the code right there, so they were able to easily decipher. I mean, not that he said anything worth a shit,
right?
Yeah, you know, but you know they still had the code. Like,
took a dump today. Yeah, well, bucket's getting full. Saw a bird. The extreme is still cold.
Yep.
This bomb sure ain't popping. I miss Gilligan's Island.
Love Gilligan's Island. Great show.
So the trial comes, and the trial is handled in a very, very strange way as far as media access goes.
What did the code say? Do we know?
It was just him.
It was literally just his day. It was his Thoreau-like journal where he talked whimsically about the forest and shit.
Right.
Yeah. So the media coverage of the trial, it was very strange. All of the main conglomerates, ABC, NBC, AP, all of those guys, they all established what was called the Unabom Trial Media Group.
Okay.
And they said that they would only give press passes to bona fide journalists.
You got to be bona fide.
You got to be bona fide. But he's also, this is the controlling of the narrative. And what was it? They had to pay a fee just to get in?
Yeah. They had to pay... that's not even if you got into the actual press pool, like to see the whole thing, because that was reserved all for the major media outlets, and every day they would do a lottery where two independent news organizations would be allowed into the trial, but all the rest of the spots were filled by the major media.
So people are basically buying tickets to go and watch a nerd... kind of show off. So basically, this is Comic-Con?
Yes.
This is the first Comic-Con of all time, 1995, yes. The Kaczynski trial.
And also, it's like Prince tickets.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other journalists who couldn't get into the room, they were put into a different room where they pumped in audio on the speakers, but you could only get to that room if you paid the $5,000 initiation fee.
Good
and
God.
Then took out liability insurance, which cost another $1,500.
Was there a cake that was in the shape of a bomb and a celebrity speaker? I mean, I guess Kaczynski was the celebrity.
Yeah,
he was $5,000 to sit in a room next to the courtroom and just hear the audio.
Just to hear the audio.
And you also hear Ted Kaczynski's mother did the same thing. Is that when she's like, and then I saw Ted in the news and I knew, he has gone into his shutdown place. She got all sad for him and she's like, lady.
So his lawyers think, all right, the only way this guy's getting out of the death penalty, because this is a federal case and the death penalty definitely applies. They think the only way to do it is to portray him as mentally ill.
Right.
But Ted... That is the last thing that he wants, and in fact,
which is also the best thing to prove he's insane.
Yeah. He was so pissed off, he said, there's no way, the only way I'm going to do a mental health defense is if you give me an 80% shot that it's going to work.
Oh, he wanted steak in the, like it's Shark Tank? He wanted 80%? I mean, how would they possibly even know that?
Well, that was his terms.
Well, then
those are his conditions.
It's 80%.
Okay.
Well, then I'll do it then. Well, you're obviously insane.
Yeah. Well, he decides, you know, he and his lawyers go through with it, but he fires them and he says, you know what? I want to defend myself.
And if you're a juror, you're like, thank God, this is going to be great. And then you're like, oh, this is like a bad first date.
I am going to die. Yeah. And he's going like, you'd be surprised how many birds you could see in one day. Up to 9. That's the biggest amount I saw. My shoes are made out of leaves.
Mr. Kaczynski, get to the facts of the case.
I'm sorry, I just put myself to sleep. Just thinking about it. Burlap is a great thing to make a tie out of if you can get a hold of it, if it's in season. A burlap season's 9 months long.
If you make the jury fall asleep, it would be a mistrial. So that's actually kind of genius.
So he decides he wants to defend himself, but the judge says the only way that he's going to even consider it is if Ted goes through a mental health examination. Mm. And of course, you know, he hates mental health and psychology
through a variation of MK Ultra.
Yeah, but he agrees to it, and the doctor on site diagnoses him as a paranoid schizophrenic with extreme violent tendencies. But he still doesn't want to go.
I thought they were going to diagnose me as a carpenter. that's crazy.
So they come back and the judge says, you know what? Nah. I'm not going to let you defend yourself. You better go ahead and do a plea bargain. So Ted Kaczynski, he pleaded guilty in exchange for life in prison, not going to the chair. And one impact statement from one of his victims said, during the sentencing, please, Your Honor, make this sentence bulletproof, bomb-proof. Lock him so far down that when he does die, he'll be closer to hell. That's where the devil belongs.
I mean, okay, no reason for the narrative here, buddy. It seems like you're editorializing a little bit. That's cool, though.
Yeah, so I guess, so he went to jail, and he's still there, right? Everybody steals his homework, you know, to copy from the prison school.
I mean, I bet you that he can still tell that turnips and carrots cooking recipe to anyone that'll listen. But now it's probably like Frito-Lays and random bologna.
And they bring him into war-torn, like gang war-torn parts of the prison in order to make them all fall asleep.
Yeah, I mean, indeed, yeah, no more riot police needed. Just put him over the loudspeaker. You know, you can cook bologna nice flame. And
sometimes a bird will go, caw, caw. Sometimes a bird will go,
that's
I saw a rabbit on my birthday. I named it Ted.
After myself.
Shut the fuck up, Ted! Shut the fuck up!
Well, just so you know, these days, Ted Kaczynski, he's in a Supermax prison in Colorado. And in 2012, he submitted his current information to the Harvard University Alumni Association.
Oh.
He listed his 8 life sentences as achievements, his current occupation as prisoner, and his current address as number 04475-046, U.S. Penitentiary, Max, P.O. Box 8500, Florence, Colorado, 81226.
Send him your panties, girls. Give him a thrill.
I bet you that he gets them, and he has no idea what they are.
I mean, that's the one. I understand why people find, like, Ted Bundy attractive, or even Richard Ramirez with his swarthy Spanish looks.
His terrible breath.
Yeah, Ted Kaczynski, girls, don't. Not with him.
I don't think
so. He's going to make your clothes smell.
Great. So Kaczynski's in prison. He killed 3 total, injured how many?
16.
16?
Yes.
And interesting story.
23 attempted bombings.
Ted Kaczynski.
And don't forget about on August 31st, the Cave Comedy Radio Sausage Party, which is going to be a ton of great sausages, bratwurst, and all that type of stuff. All day on Sunday, we're going to be doing live podcasts. We're going to have a big live show with all your favorite CCR people. And you can make a whole weekend of it if you want to, because we've got the last podcast on the left live the night before on August 30th.
Yeah.
So
everybody vote for us. on the for the Creakies podcast.
Yeah, go vote. You can go to the Facebook page and find a link to vote for us at the Creak Awards for best podcast, and you know the Roast Marcus Parks for best specialty show. Fucking Last Podcast on the Left for best variety show. We're nominated for a bunch of shit.
We got
this
a bunch
year.
Of stuff, and we got I've gotten a couple of random messages with people. Everyone has their own thing that they were mildly upset about that we were making fun of, but we make fun of everything and we love everybody. And
yeah, so yeah.
I got like five of them literally just be like, have you thought about maybe potatoes are tasty and you shouldn't talk about them in a negative way? But of course.
Yeah, everyone gets their own little piece.
Yep. Yeah. All right, everybody. Well, let's do a Hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
And, Hail Satan.
And of course,
Halgeen.
Hail yourselves.
There's cum in the Papa John's dough.
Mm. Ah, don't ruin this for me. Papa's in the house. He's coming in all the dough.
Uh-oh. Is that what Papa means? Papa's in the house?
Papa's in the house.
He just came in his pants?
Mm-hmm.
Well, inhale me, everyone.
Yes. All right, buddy. All right, guys. We'll talk to you soon.